The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host, guest, random reptoid, or chupacabra may not necessarily reflect those of AM 950 Radio, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Now, it's time to step into the unknown. There are things people experience but never talk about. A shadow moving in the corner, flickering of the lights, a disembodied voice. We invite you to talk with us. Share your story, share your experience. Because this isn't just your story, this is our story. This is Ghostbox Radio with Greg Bakken.
And this is Ghostbox Radio on AM 950, where every night we talk about the paranormal, ufology, Bigfoot, and so much more. My name is Greg Bakken. Thank you very much for joining me on this Wednesday before Easter, which plays a big part in tonight's program. I also have with me tonight, I have in the other room, Adam. How are you tonight?
Doing well, sir. Doing well. We are moving towards the Easter holiday, and I could not be more excited for not only the holiday, because I get to grill for the family, but two, tonight's guest.
Is that the Easter tradition, grilling?
It is now. It's happened the last 2 years, so I've kind of been like, you know what, let's stop the arguments about who's serving where. I got burgers, I got dogs, bring BYOB, bring your own butts, bring your own seats, come on over.
Wow. And yet I didn't get an invite.
If you want to.
No, I don't, actually.
Okay. Well, thanks.
I'm just kidding. Well, I'm not kidding. Now I'm in a tough spot because I don't want to sound rude or anything, but I also don't want to go to your house.
Fair, so, you know, fair, I mean, sometimes I don't want to go there either.
So here, you know, tonight I was down in near downtown Minneapolis. I haven't been down there in a long time. It's interesting to see what's still there, what's not there. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised I was able to navigate myself through there. I was out there tonight with my friend Brianna over at Megas, and we were just laughing. We had a good time laughing. We were over at a restaurant. I don't know if you heard of it, called Spitz. I've never heard of it before.
Neither have I.
It's a Mediterranean restaurant, and it was really, really good. So I enjoyed that quite a bit.
I got to give that one a shot. I love Mediterranean
food. Oh, I had a gyro tonight. It was a chicken one. It was very good. But, I mean, what Brianna had and what the other people were getting around us, some really good stuff. They have a lot of cocktails and stuff as well. So fun time was had and a lot of laughs. It was a good night.
Right on. I got to try that place called Spitz.
Spitz, S-P-I-T-Z.
Well, you know, what you mentioned about Mavericks. Oh, my God. Philly is amazing.
Did you go?
Yeah. That Philly is absolutely amazing. Probably one of the best I've had in, God, I would honestly say about 15, 20 years.
Well, I'm glad you went.
That was so good.
That was very good. We should still get a Ghostbox Radio group out there one day.
Oh, I think we should. That would
and
be
just
fun.
Just go and, you know, everyone pay for their own, obviously. Yeah. But you know, you know, we got to put the disclaimers in now. We don't want to overpromise anything. You know, we're not even going to give transportation. Just meet us there.
Yeah.
I know I'm making this sound really good. Tonight. I'm excited about this. I really am. I know, Adam, that you've been really excited about the idea of our guest tonight. Our guest is author Robert K. Wilcox. And, you know, I've said this before, and I will always say this, is that it is very clear when I do the show and I talk about religion and stuff, I do stay in the Christianity Catholic arena because that is what I know most. It doesn't mean that we won't venture into other areas, but it's especially around Easter. There is something about those artifacts and those rituals and stuff that I find very interesting. The one that I find the most interesting is the Shroud of Turin. Now, I've been doing this radio show for nearly 10 years, and I have never been able to find somebody who could adequately talk about the Shroud of Turin. There's a Shroud of Turin, it's like an affiliation or something out in Colorado. And I reached out to them many years ago, and they're just like, we don't think you're going to take us seriously. We're not going to be on your program, which is, I think, is a shame because that is couldn't be any further from the truth. So I think the timing, you know, it all happens at the time for the right reason, and that's tonight. And so the book is called The Truth About the Shroud of Turin, Solving the Mystery. It's available on Amazon. And, you know, even just going back and forth in email, we were just talking about this, and it was a lot of fun. I'm welcoming Robert K. Wilcox. Welcome to Ghostbox Radio.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
I am very glad that you're here, and as we get closer to it, and, you know, that was the thing, I was already starting to get overwhelmed with my own excitement to talk about it, because, you know, I'd send you, like, things back in, I think I was trying to actually show you, Robert, that I did know what I was talking about a little bit when it came to, like, we're talking about the burn marks on the shroud and stuff through email, and you're probably like, I already said I'll be on the show, leave me alone, and that's fair. But I really wanted to just be.
I didn't say that.
No. I mean, because it was.
I'm happy. Yeah.
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 So for those who may be unclear, and it's very possible that they are, can you give us a quick overview of what the Shroud of Turin is, please?
Yes, it's it's a 15 foot length of cloth that was wrapped. Around a dead man who had been crucified, and it wasn't wrapped like a mummy. It's wrapped head to toe and back, and it gives you the impression of both the front and the back of the man who was crucified. Now, until 1898, it was thought to be just as kind of a stick drawing, because on the cloth itself, when you look at it, it just looks like a stick drawing.
Mm-hmm.
But when they took the first photograph of it, that was the beginning of the Shroud of Turin and everything that we're talking about right now, because the guy who took the photograph, his name was Secondo Pia. It was in Italy. It was in Turin, where the shroud is. As they say, he nearly dropped the plate, his negative plate, because what he saw in his negative suddenly was a positive.
Yeah.
A real body in rigor mortis, a dead man who had been hurt the same way that the Gospels, that the Bible says that Jesus was hurt. Crucified, whipped, crowned with thorns, but in certain different ways, not the way that we've always envisioned it. For instance, the crown is not a wreathlet, it's a full cap of thorns, and it has it covers the whole head, and the man's been beaten in the face, and he's the man is naked. But you can't tell this because he has his hands over his loins. It was just, it caused quite a tremendous, yell out throughout the world in 1898, because it looked like, what's going on here? And however, a prelate, a religious man, I believe he was a priest, said, oh, no, his name was Thurston, I think his name was.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is just a painting. And they put it away without it died down. And let me tell you, it is not a painting. Subsequently, more people began to look at it, and scientist after scientist began to look at the body, and they began to say, this is a real human body. They could identify these various things. There are blood stains all over it, many, many blood stains. The only blood stain that seems old, though, after death, is the one, there's a spear, just like the gospel says happened to Jesus. That one there is sort of an effusion of water and blood.
Wow.
So it began to look really like, I mean, the amount of people who were, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I've just like, because like you said, the spear with the water and blood, I mean, that is textbook gospel.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And yet it deviates from the traditional. If this cloth can be traced back to 1354, we have documents that you can count them right back there. There's no question about it. Now, how does a 1354 faker put a negative image of a dead man on a cloth? That's really the beginning of the scientific mystery. There's no way he could have done it.
No. Well, and you know, the thing is, too, you know, as you mentioned, as I read in the book, and the book, once again, folks, is called The Truth About the Shroud of Turin, Solving the Mystery. In the book, you say yourself, you know, when back even in the late 1800s, when they're like, well, maybe it's paint. If it was paint and you could get and this can call this thing back to the 1300s, that paint would have been gone a long time ago, wouldn't it?
Well, that's a good point. But let me tell you, there's no paint on this shroud.
No.
Nobody painted this thing. This is a real photograph of a dead man, a corpse in rigor mortis. There are interesting details to it too. He's been flogged and beaten. There are about 120 whip marks on him, and Jeez. There was a little dog bone they theorized because something chipped out pieces of flesh out of it. I hate to get so
no, but it's
nasty
it,
about
it's
it.
It's important, yeah.
Yeah, this is right out of a Roman flagrum, exactly what they did. He has bruises on his shoulders, like someone who carried a cross.
And his knees, too, right?
Pardon me?
And his knees as well, right? Because he kept falling.
There are blood marks
everywhere.
I mean, all over the shroud. And one of the most intriguing things to me is that all of these blood marks, they came first. The image comes second. It's over the
right.
blood mark.
Oh, overlaid.
And so we know that the man was put into this shroud. And he bled on it, and then the image came after it. And I'll just throw something out that's really interesting to me, but all of the blood stains have, 95% of the blood stains have perfect borders on them. So I ask you, if the blood, as it did, dried into the cloth, so that if you have a blood, you've seen a clot on your own hand.
Yeah,
it'll clot right into the bandage that you have on your hand. How could someone take the cloth off without ripping all these pieces of all these blood clots that are all that 95% of them have perfect borders.
They do.
I mean,
they're
real blood, say doctors. You see the separation of serum and cellular mass in them. And that's the way real blood behaves. And once this person was put into this cloth, it would have hardened. The blood would have hardened. And there's no way you could pull that cloth off of him to get the body out. So how did the body get out of the cloth? Something that is...
And to your point, I mean, I never really thought about this. I mean, if you look at anything that's bleeding, it's going to all the blood, to your point, all would join together on the cloth and just, like, take over
exactly.
the cloth. Yes.
Exactly. It would mess up every one of these clots that are on here, and yet they have perfect borders. They're not messed up. Nobody pulled that cloth off of the body because the body, it got out of the cloth in some way that is supernatural. And, I mean, that's the implication here. So
I also like the fact, Robert, that, I mean, I guess this is a way whether, you know, and we'll talk in the next segment about, you know, who we think this person is, even though we're alluding down that line very strongly. But, you know, the idea I'm reading from the book and stuff that, you know, I take for granted is that this is a wake-up call for a lot of people when they think about crucifixion, when they see that the nails are not going through the hands, they're going through the wrist. They're not going through the feet, they're going through the ankles. which it makes
exactly
to us it makes sense now because that's what supports that person on the cross. But everything that we've always heard, and I think it's kind of said in the Bible, isn't it, that it was hands and feet?
Yes, absolutely, and you make a tremendous point there because, I mean, every depiction I've ever seen always puts the nails through the hands, but the hands won't hold a person on a cross, and this man had his hands way, way up above him. You can see from the blood flows, they're going down the arm, and if you put the nails in the hand, it would rip through from the weight of the body.
Yeah.
So where they put the nail and where it is on the Shroud of Turin, it's in a space called Destote space, which is above of the hand. It's if you put your hand on your wrist and push down, you'll feel it. It's like a little hole. Mm. That's where they put the nail.
Oh yeah.
These are realistic details that you just don't get anywhere else, especially in pictures of Jesus on the cross and so on.
Absolutely. This is an absolutely fascinating conversation, and I'm loving every second of it. If you have any comments or questions, please put it into the comments on the Facebook Live. Let's do this. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we got a lot more to talk about with the truth about the Shroud of Turin. Our special guest tonight, Robert K. Wilcox. We got so much more to get through. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. So, Adam, what do I finally get the title of the voice of AM 950? I mean, these breaks are all about me now.
It really is, and that makes it really hard to edit this at the end of the night because it's your voice wave like the entire time.
I don't know. Did I get the vibe right on the tiki?
You
the
did.
Tilted Tiki, all right.
Yeah, I really like the music on that one, too.
Oh, good, good.
I thought it was really nice.
Oh, good, good. So, yeah, all right. Well, anyway, welcome back to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. My name is Greg Bach, and we're having a fantastic conversation tonight. We have on author Robert K. Wilcox. We've been talking about the truth about the Shroud of Turin. We've been talking about just kind of the background of this what are we calling this, Robert? I keep wanting to call it like a cloak, a garment. It's none of those. It's linen. What am I trying
shroud,
to say here?
Yeah, the Shroud of Turin. It is a 14-foot length of linen cloth.
That's what I meant to say. Yeah,
it's linen cloth, and it's in a herringbone type of design, I guess, which is very what they had in Jerusalem and around the Middle East at 2,000 years ago. So that's another discussion, is whether or not it's the right cloth, but it is. And
that was a big debate, though, wasn't it, for a number of years? Because correct me if I'm wrong, there was carbon dating done to the cloth, but didn't they not grab samples mainly from the area that had been fixed
exactly.
in a fire?
Exactly. Yeah. They that was a big deal. I remember I had written my first book, which was published by Macmillan, about the Shroud, and I was pretty much believing, as I do now, that the Shroud is the real deal, that it really wrapped Jesus and it has evidence of resurrection. But at that time, there had been a study on the Shroud. They were allowed some scientists, a whole bunch of scientists, called themselves Stirrup. I forget what it means, but they had done a study of the Shroud and had, for instance, found there is absolutely no paint on it at all.
Yeah.
As a stroke, you know, there were some little tiny little. So anyway, that was one of the things they had done, And then they were asked to provide this group of people who were really very anti-Shroud people with a piece of the cloth. And they gave them a piece that was off of the very end of the Shroud. And, it was found to be in the 13th century or the 14th century, 1300-somethings, yeah, which is right when we could actually put it back there. And they got on TV and said the Shroud is a hoax and so on. And slowly it came to light that they had taken a piece off of a patch into the Shroud, that's what they had dated, which did come from the 15th or 13th century, whatever it was,
sure,
that they,
yep,
had said that it was. And that was that they folded into the woodwork.
They disappeared after that. No, that makes a lot of sense. Now I want to talk about a couple things. And forgive me if I jump around a little bit, because there's a couple things I want to kind of get to here.
Sure.
And I'll do my best to try to keep it coherent. So obviously, does the Catholic Church recognize this as Jesus's burial linen?
Not officially, but does one guy next to the Pope believe it? Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't done it officially, but they've done so much for it now. They took it out of it. At one time, I was the only person who had color photos of the Shroud.
No.
And the reason was, in 1973, I went to an exposition of the Shroud. These were only held at great moments for the. It was owned by the king, not by the church.
Okay.
And I got so close to it, I said, "Gee, somebody could throw a match on it and blow it up." But what I was getting to is, they have now put it into a great sealed, vacuum-sealed thing that nobody can get to, because the Shroud has been through so many things in its history where it could have been destroyed, but it wasn't. But anyway, that was, I forget what we were talking about, but they've put it into this, they've put it into this cocoon almost now.
Yeah.
It has the airs and everything else, and that's so the church, you know, in Rome now. And by the way, it's back. It was given back to the church about 10 years ago or something, because the king of Italy, who owned it and had given it, had taken care of it. He gave it to the church. They are doing all of these things to keep it preserved. So the answer to your question really is, they're not putting it down on paper and announcing it from the heavens and so on, but they really do believe it, and they realize that this could be the ultimate show of truth of Christianity. So
it's very interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I've never seen it in person, but if I am not mistaken, that the seeing it with your own eyes, the imprint of the man there is extraordinarily faint, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you've done your homework there, because when you look at it, the closer you are to it, the less you can see of it, because it was, it's this very subtle darkening and lightening of the cloth that makes the image, and that says what is really so interesting about it, that the image is made by a darkening or lightening of the fibers in the linen in an infinitesimal way. There, I mean, it's each thread actually has many threads in it. And each one of those is, I don't want to say singed. No, they are affected with color, either lighter or darker, in a very minute way around each thread, which you and I couldn't even hold.
Right.
Something did to that, and nowadays I think they're getting close to saying it was some sort of cold nuclear explosion, but that's a bad term to use. But there are such things as that would give this kind of blast of heat or light very minutely that would make this kind of uniform impression or making so that you can see the image in the negative.
And it's also like, and this is what's so amazing about it. It's obviously a huge rush of energy that creates this imprint on this linen, in my opinion, the way I see it. But it clearly doesn't do anything to which you would think would damage the linen itself. The only damage that's come to it had been the fire, centuries later. So, you know, it's like there's something, and I get your point when you say the word nuclear, where it's just like it kind of some kind of like instant flash that imprints what's happening.
Yes, instant cold flash.
Sure.
And I was I just recently was reading something about the shroud, and there are some people who think that that's what it is. I forget the name of a cold type of nuclear work, but it has to do with something happening, and it could have done that. But the thing that is so incredible is how precise every one of these millions of fibers on the shroud are exactly impacted the same way.
So it's even.
You can make a 3D image out of the shroud of Turin. Now that's one of those things with a space age type mechanism. It's called a VP8 image analyzer. That's the kind of thing where you can turn the shroud around. You can turn the man in the shroud around. Excuse me.
Sure.
And look at him.
I see what you're saying.
He has. You can't do that with photographs.
No.
You can't do that with painting.
So one of the things too, like it can't be lightning because it's I'm like it can't be lightning because I'm going off of my religious belief that he's in some sort of burial stone, but we don't know. I mean, we would assume that regardless because that was the way it worked back then, but we don't know that for certain, though, do we?
Well, lightning would have destroyed the float.
That's
would
true
burn
as well.
It would knock it out. Whatever did this, its power was light, and I don't mean just light like you get from a light bulb, but I mean light. It's tiny. Its power was tiny in that sense, and I understand that in some atom type understanding that you can have that. For lack of a better word, a flash of that light.
Sure.
It would be like cold light.
Absolutely. I do have a question from the comments here. Richie B. says, is it a divine method that makes the image or scientific?
Well, that's how you want to look at it. In my opinion, this is evidence of the resurrection.
Yeah.
So I tell you that it's a theological thing. But science has worked this thing over, and the best they can say is it's indecipherable. It's unexplainable. Mm-hmm. So you can take your pick.
And I think it's interesting because I think that alone, and everyone's going to have their own opinion on religion or anything else, but alone that piece alone is what can you? I think you can define as a leap of faith. in a sense, that you could be like, I choose to believe that this is what it is, and that's part of what I think. Sure. I think there's a difference between religion and faith, in my personal opinion. That, you know, you're like, I and I'm actually, you know, Robert, just so you know, I'm right there with you. The idea of like I choose because there hasn't been anything presented to me that makes me think otherwise.
Exactly. Listen, if this was the shroud of Aristotle, everybody would be on board.
Right.
This is a problem because it's a religious thing. But listen, in my book, it covers the whole gamut. But in the last 100 years, literally thousands of scientists have gone over this, and they just don't have a problem with it. It's real blood. It's a real body. We can see everything is like that. So it's we're definitely the burden of proof is now on the doubters.
Absolutely. And Richie B. has another question. I was kind of asked something similar to this. He says, so it wouldn't happen to your eye or any other human. And I guess my question, if I can kind of jump off of that, we've never found anything close to this ever, have we, to our knowledge?
Not that I know of, and not to our knowledge, no. I've done enough research. There's nothing like this. There is nothing like this. As I said, you can make a 3D image out of it. Where does that come from? And
yeah.
This cloth is at least 500, 600 years old.
And what I think people may not realize, because I didn't realize this until much later in life, that all the pictures we generally see are the negative that actually gives a positive image.
That's correct. That's correct. If you look at it in the positive, you see that stick-like drawing, and
yep.
it just looks bad.
And you can kind of get confused, too. I remember being young and seeing it get confused by the burned corners, thinking that's actually part of the image, and it actually isn't. It's just burned. It's just burned from that fire back in the 14th century. It's kind of hard to kind of differentiate. I was going to say also when you talked about it being put into that case it was. I mean, I remember footage. It had about 25 years ago or something like that. That wherever it was for, there was a fire there as well, and they had to break the case to get it out because it was in danger yet again.
That happened. Yeah, we almost lost the shroud. About 100 times, though, if you go back into history, there have been many of those things. But yeah, some guy ran into the church and opened it up. He burned his hands and everything, but he grabbed the shroud out of it. And about those marks that look the fire marks from the 15th century fire. The reason it's interesting that the shroud was always kept folded like you would fold a blanket.
Yep.
And so there was a fire in the 15th century, and it singed the sides of that blanket at the corners,
yep.
The four corners. So they had to put patches in there, and that's what you see on the shroud today. You see those patches there, and the patches were the ones that gave the guys who wanted to say it was a phony that gave it that 15th century.
Now I need to run off to break, but before that, I want to ask you one last question. With the blood being on the shroud, someone in the Joanne in the comments kind of asked, has that ever been figured out to what type of blood type that person in the shroud is?
Yes, it's B. BA, I believe. Let me see. Do I have that around here somewhere? I think I do. It's AB, which is typical for Palestine.
Oh, interesting.
Yep.
Oh, how incredible. Let's do this. Let's take our next break here. When we come back, I want to talk about where the shroud's been. I have some questions. If you have any, put it into the comments. What a great conversation. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. And join me tomorrow on Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bach. And we're going to replay our interview with author C.L. Thomas. She talks about her book, Dancing with Demons, A Paranormal Encounter. It was a great conversation, definitely one worth listening to again. If you want to, you can join me on Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken Facebook page at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time tomorrow as we do our next edition of Myth or Mystery, which is our panel show with seasoned paranormal investigators and mediums as we take a look at clips and decide whether what people had sent us, these clips, whether they're paranormal or not. And a lot of viewer voting is included with that as well. So definitely, if that sort of thing is interesting to you, please check us out. It's a lot of fun. Welcome back to Ghost Box Radio. My name is Greg Bakken, and we are talking about the truth about the Shroud of Turin. And I see some people in the comments a little unclear about what the Shroud of Turin is. We're not going to rehash it. Certainly, please take a listen to the episode. Robert does an amazing job of explaining what it is, but it is the burial cloth of a man that has their body imprinted, which a lot of people, including myself, believe could very well be the body of Jesus Christ, as that those markings on there are very, very similar and very exacting, actually, to what has been recounted in the Bible when he was crucified. So that is really where we're at with that. I got some questions, but in the comments I have Carol, and Carol says, I truly believe it is the Shroud of Jesus, but I have what may be a dumb question. So can DNA testing be done?
I think they are trying to do that, but the problem is the ancient, the age of the cloth. I can't give you a perfect answer for that, but I believe it's in the works when they can get the right DNA situation. That's about the best I can do for you.
Well, and the thing is, and I mean, I'd love someone to prove me wrong. I don't think you can do a DNA testing because we don't have any other DNA of what we believe is Jesus. So you can't.
There you go.
I mean, to me, that seems like we can't put it up against anything else as an example. Because DNA is a relatively new process that had been introduced scientifically in our world in the 20th century. It's a great question. I think a lot of us take for granted how long some of these things have been around. Like, for example, fingerprinting had only been around since the early 20th century. So, you know, it's those are things that we just have kind of come accustomed to, I guess. Sam in the comments was just saying that she was, I think, getting it confused with in the Bible about that cloth that someone uses to wipe Jesus' face, and his face is imprinted on that cloth. And this is something different. But I mean, it just goes to show, Robert, how much happened during that time that leads to so many questions about what it is, which is why it's good that we have you on tonight.
Well, there is, by the way, a cloth. It's called the cloth I'm trying to think of the name of it right now. But anyway, it's in Spain, and it's been around since the 6th century. And they have taken Oviedo, that's what it's called, Oviedo. And sometimes they call it the veil, but its history goes back to the 6th century, and they say that it went over the face, and they have taken what Oviedo has, it's just a face veil, and they've matched it to about 50 different similarities, not only similarities, the exact same kind of mark that is on the Shroud of Turin face. Now, it doesn't show a face. It shows blood. It shows massive amounts of blood, and what they've done is put it over the ridge of the nose, matching the two the way it goes over the nose and so on. So that does exist.
I see that. This is new to me, and Sam brought this up in the comments, and so thank you, Sam, for that. The Sudarium of Oviedo.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it.
And I'm looking at it now, and I get it. Wow. Incredible. That's the next thing I'm going to be looking at here. And then Richie had said we could match ethnicity with DNA, correct? And we kind of talked about that already, that it matches Palestinian blood, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. The blood type is from that area.
Yeah.
And there are also pieces of plants and so on that come right from the area of Jerusalem, even. They've made lots of matches like that. I thought that it was very interesting to note that what did I have here? Doggone it, I just had something here that I wanted to say that on the... Oh, yeah, here it is. The picture of Jesus in the first 5 centuries was of a young man, sort of Grecian looking, no beard or anything. Well, the shroud, its journey goes from, and there's a good way to do this, right from the tomb. It goes to Edessa, Syria, and in 544. It's taken out of the walls of Edessa, Syria. It was put there because Christians were being martyred and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And this what they called the Mandylion, which we think is the Shroud of Turin, came out of it. And suddenly, throughout Christendom, the portrait of Jesus changed from that young child to the face we see in the shroud. I mean, long hair, truncated mustache, broken nose, the whole thing, huge eyes, which are distinguishing in much of it. So it looks very much like when that was discovered in the 6th century, the Mandylion, which we think is the shroud, that suddenly, and from there, it was exalted, it was taken to Constantinople, the shroud was taken out weekly there, and then it disappears, and it's connected to the Knights Templar. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
That was actually going to be my next question, Robert, about did the Knights Templar ever touch that thing?
Well, there's a lot of evidence that the Knights Templar took it probably around the 1200s when the fourth crusade went to Constantinople. That's where we think the shroud was. They took it. It disappeared, and it surfaces in 1354 in the home of a Knights Templar nephew. So that's the connection that you can make with that. But you can make a pretty good history all the way from the day they gathered both the shroud and the cloth that went over the head, which we just spoke about. From in the Bible, it talks about that, and then it goes to Edessa. It's found in the Edessa city walls. Then the picture of Jesus changes, and it goes to Constantinople. It's taken by the Templars, and then it finally the history that we can actually is bona fide that we know of. We can trace it back piece by piece. Is a Templar nephew, I think he was.
Incredible. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when people find anything that's of value of any kind, the first question is, do we have any provenance? Can we hit back the lineage of it? And it feels like that there's a fair amount of provenance with the Shroud of Turin.
Very much. I didn't give you really, I mean, it would take a half an hour to go through all the little this and that stuff, but you can take it right back to the tomb.
And that's incredible. I mean, that is truly incredible. And once again, folks, the book is called The Truth About the Shroud of Turin, Solving the Mystery. Robert K. Wilcox has written this. I have the Kindle version, which is what I'm reading right now. And I think this this answers the question, so to speak, just by you saying that you can able to kind of trace us back to the tomb. But Richie asks, I think narrowing the geographical area down definitely says a lot. But were there many people buried in this type of cloth, not the image, but the actual material, was it used commonly, is what I'm trying to say.
I don't know that. I presume since this cloth was known to be available in 2000, that maybe others would have used it. My idea right now is that, yes, you could put people in there. I myself went to Paris thinking that I could find similar cloths. And I remember it was a great day. I went up, this priest who was running the show on all the old stuff that they had there.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in, and all we found were the decomposition of bodies on these things. You never found any kind of face or anything on it because the bodies deteriorated inside of the cloth.
Yep.
The Shroud of Turin is unique in that sense.
It really is, and it's pretty incredible. Everything about this is it answers questions, but it opens up a lot more questions, doesn't it? About because there's so much wonderful stuff that we're gleaning from this, and you know, and for me, the big part is it's like what imprinted the body signature on this linen that has lasted for 2,000 years. That's just
right.
So incredible.
It is.
I don't know. I think that
a warning to all of us. Better get right. Better stop doing all those bad things.
Well, I would think so. I would agree with that. Just kind of seeing if we got any more questions here. And we did answer this earlier. You mentioned it earlier. But, Sam, I do think that you should definitely re-listen to the episode. But the cloth, once again, is where? The Turin, the Shroud, I should say.
Oh, it's now in Turin, Italy. It's in a special casket, and if you go to Turin, Italy, you can go to the church where it's kept.
And you can see it. It's on display. It's like all 14 feet are open for people to kind of look at in this grand frame, right?
I believe so. I have not seen it in that. It's, you know, I saw it, 30 years ago, and there was nothing on it. I kept thinking, some guy's going to throw a bomb at it.
No kidding. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's just incredible.
I got so close to it because I'm taking pictures of it, and I said, how can I do this? Somebody could burn it or something. And they realized that, and they stopped that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I just think about the first time I ever even heard about the Shroud of Turin. This takes me back a show called In Search Of. That's where I first ever heard of it, with Leonard Nimoy. I don't know if you're familiar with the program back in the late 70s.
Sure, I remember that.
Yeah,
that's where I,
and it was a really very intriguing. But, you know, thank goodness, Robert, for books like yours, because this is really, really important. And we haven't, as Robert mentioned, we haven't talked a whole lot about a lot of stuff that's in the book. I mean, this is just a very general overview. I have to say again, please, this is an interesting subject to you, and I've been reading it and I love it. The Truth About the Shroud of Turin, Solving the Mystery, written by Robert K. Wilcox. It is available on Amazon. I got the Kindle version. Robert, this was so great. Thank you so very much for taking your time tonight and talking to us about this.
Thanks so much, Greg. I appreciate it. And it's a worthy subject.
It really is. And maybe we can, once I read the rest of it, maybe we can find a reason to have you come back on and we can talk more.
Sure enough.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Everyone, have a great night. We'll be back tomorrow with C.L. Thomas and Friday, Casual Friday. Take care, everyone.